For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening. Welcome. I've been speaking for a while off and on about Japanese Buddhist background to Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen in the 1200s, and Japanese poetry and aesthetic backgrounds. I'm going to continue tonight talking about another Japanese Buddhist poet, but jumping about 500 years to Japanese Soto monk poet Ryokan, who lived 1758 to 1831, so not quite modern, but close. So Ryokan lived in what's called the Tokugawa period, which began in 1600 and went to the mid-1800s, and during that time, the government had a lot of control over Buddhism and insisted that all the different schools of Buddhism define themselves very closely, and they had a lot of control. And during that period, Soto school, which came out of Dogen and which we're part of, actually suppressed Dogen's writings. So we know Dogen mostly in terms of his wonderful writings, which I talk about a lot. At that time, he was more known just as a founding figure, and very few Soto priests and nobody else in Japan read his writings. But Ryokan did. He was a very well-trained Soto monk and teacher, but he preferred to eventually live a very humble life and follow the tradition that goes back to the poem we just chanted, the Song of the Grass Hut, which goes back 1,000 years before him to a guy named Shuto in Chinese, Sekito, who's actually before the Chinese Soto or Zaodong school. But this idea of hermit poets living in little grass huts is part of the Zen tradition, kind of a small part of it in a way, but very noted part of it. So Ryokan eventually went back to his home village and lived in a small hut outside the village and made his living as a mendicant monk, very humbly. He was a very humble guy. And actually is very famous as a fool. One of his Dharma names means great fool. And he really was. He was. There's all these stories about his foolishness. He liked to... he was very forgetful. He would forget where he left his begging bowls. He'd like to play with the village children. But also he was a very fine calligrapher, and even in his own lifetime, his calligraphy became very valuable. He was also a very fine poet, and now we know him as a great poet. So what I want to do tonight is to read a bunch of his poetry. So I've been reading poetry of various people, various Zen people, Buddhist people, even before Zen developed in Japan. But I'll start with just a few stories about him to show how he... there are many colorful stories about him to show how he earned his name as a great fool. Somewhat at random here. actually, so it was at age 39 that he went back to his home village and lived at his father was a kind of a small village chieftain or head of the village. Let's see, in terms of his playing, well, let's see. So one of the things is that even during his lifetime, again, his calligraphy is very elegant and very valuable, and people would trick him into doing calligraphy for them because it was very valuable. He was so there's all kinds of stories, like somebody caught him stealing flowers from their yard, so to repay his stealing flowers, they made him do calligraphy. Or people would leave paper and ink around so that he would do calligraphy. Another time, he was begging on the highway station town, and a child with a sheet of paper came to him and said, "Reverend Ryokan, please write something on this paper, something that his parents had put him up to." And Ryokan asked, "Well, what are you going to use it for?" And the child said, "I'm going to make a kite and fly it. So please write some words to call the wind." Of course, people wanted calligraphy with kind of Zen writing or Zen phrases or wisdom, like the calligraphy we have on the back wall there, which says "Straightforward mind. This is the place of awakening." You know, these elegant Zen phrases. Ryokan wrote on the paper for the child, "Sky above, great wind," and gave the calligraphy to the child. So this would be helpful for the kite. There's stories of him playing with children. More famous one. He was playing hide and go seek with the children. So he would stop from his begging rounds and play ball with the children, or just play various games with the children. And one time, he was playing hide and seek, and he was hiding from the village children, and he hid in a haystack. And as dusk came, the children went home to go to eat, and leaving Ryokan behind. Early the next morning, a farmer pulled some straw out from the stack and found Ryokan hidden inside. And the farmer said, "Reverend Ryokan, what are you doing?" And Ryokan said, "Shh, the children will find me." So, maybe he'd been in samadhi all night, but, again, there's all these stories of his foolishness. He was this very humble guy, but he had these wonderful this wonderful poetry. So I just want to read a bunch of poetry today, and then we can talk about it. So, somewhat at random. He did a lot of pilgrimage, wandering around before he settled into this hermitage. "Did I expect this? Tonight again I sleep outdoors, tamping down weeds along the roadside." So just an image of how his life was as he was wandering. So he lived by doing what's called takuhatsu, which is going around with his begging bowls and stopping in front of each door asking for... There's a formal practice that I did when I was in a monastery in southern Japan where you just ask for... you do a chant and people come and give you whatever they give you. And it's something that there's a tradition for in that lay people in Japan want to give... Anyway, so he did this practice. Here's a poem about it from Ryokan. The cloud-covered sky is all open, the heart of takuhatsu as it is, a gift from heaven. So just to receive whatever is given, it was the practice. And this is actually the way that monks are trained in giving, is to learn how to receive. Another one. Past has passed away. Future has not arrived. Present does not remain. Nothing is reliable. Everything must change. You hold on to letters and names in vain, facing yourself to believe in them. Stop chasing new knowledge. Leave old views behind. Study the essential. And then see through it. When there is nothing left to see through, then you will know your mistaken views. I'll read that one again. Past has passed away. Future has not arrived. Present does not remain. Nothing is reliable. Everything must change. You hold on to letters and names in vain, forcing yourself to believe in them. Stop chasing new knowledge. Leave old views behind. Study the essential, and then see through it. When there is nothing left to see through, then you will know your mistaken views. So, a wisdom poem. Some of you know the chant that we do when we put on our okesu or raksu, our Buddhist robes, and this starts the same way. Great is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. Buddhas have authentically transmitted it. Ancestors have intimately received it. Beyond wide, beyond narrow, beyond cloth, beyond threads, maintain it thus. Then you are called a keeper of the robe. So some of you know the old Zen saying, do not confuse the finger pointing to the moon with the moon. So based on that saying, you see the moon by pointing your finger. You recognize the finger by the moon. The moon and the finger are not different, not the same. In order to guide a beginner, this analogy is temporarily used. When you have realized this, there is no moon, no finger. I'll read that one again. So the traditional saying is don't confuse the finger pointing with the moon itself. Ryokan says, you see the moon by pointing your finger. You recognize the finger by the moon. The moon and the finger are not different, not the same. In order to guide a beginner, this analogy is temporarily used. When you have realized this, there's no moon and no finger. If someone asks about the mind of this monk, say it is no more than a passage of wind in the vast sky. If someone asks about the mind of this monk, Say it is no more than a passage of wind in the vast sky. This one is about his staff, Nyowi or Kotsa, like this. This is a staff of the four given to symbolize teacher authorization to teach. So he had passed through his training. He was finished his training, and then went off wandering, and then settled in this modest grass hut. So this is a poem about his staff. It is not a tile or a pebble. Who takes it as a jewel, rare as black dragon's horn, just like a blue elephant's trunk. Autumn evenings attending Dharma talks, spring afternoons it shares, sitting and dozing. Although it is useless for sweeping away dust, yet it does support the mind of the way. Another one. Without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. When plain vegetables can soothe hunger, a patched robe is enough to cover this bent old body. Alone, I hike with the deer. Cheerfully, I sing with village children. The stream under the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountaintop fits my heart. I'll read that one again. Without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. So, you know, basic Buddhist teaching is about contentment and about not being caught up in all the desires of the world and all of the, you know, all of the consumer products and so forth, just to be content. It's not that we get rid of all desires, but to be satisfied with what we have. So he says, without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. Plain vegetables can soothe hunger. A patched robe is enough to cover this bent old body. So he lived this very humble life, living outside his home village in this little patched hut, in this little thatched hut, this grass hut, like we chanted. Alone I hike with the deer, cheerfully I sing with village children. The stream under the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountaintop fits my heart. So, like the song of the grass hut, this is, you know, Ryokan was an historical figure. This is an image of simplicity and the simple life and just enjoying, you know, everyday simple activity. Another one in the same spirit. All my life, too lackadaisical to stand up for myself, buoyantly I leave everything to the harmony of reality. In my sack, three scoops of rice, beside the fire, a bundle of firewood. Who would ask about the traces of delusion and enlightenment? How could you know the dusts of name and gain? Evening rain, in my thatched hut, I casually stretch out my legs. So he really expressed the joys of a very simple life. On the other hand, you know, as he got older, he talked about loneliness, and here's another one. Old and sick, I woke up and couldn't sleep. Late at night, the four walls were somber and heavy. No light in the lamp, no charcoal for fire, only a miserable chill piled up on the bed. Not knowing how to divert my mind, in darkness I walked with a cane at the garden's edge. All the stars spread out, blossoms of a bald tree. The distant valley stream flows, a lute with no strings. That night, with that feeling, I had some understanding. Sometime, some morning, for whom shall I sing? So that one is sort of close to the, in some ways, to the poem that we will, it starts off the essay we're going to talk about in the practice period in April and May, which I'll mention later. But I just want to read some more of these poems of Ryokan, just to give you a feeling of him. Day by day, day by day, and day by day, quietly, in the company of children I live. In my sleeves, tiny embroidered balls, two or three, useless, intoxicated in this peaceful spring. So, you know, he just wandered around on his begging rounds and stopped and played with children and just, you know, just an old fool. In the evening of a thousand peaks, I close my eyes. Among humans, myriad thoughts are trivial. Serenely, I sit on the mat. In solitude, I face an open window. The incense is burned out, and a dark night is long. Dew is thick, my robe is thin. Emerging from samadhi, I walk in the garden. The moon has risen over the highest peak. So, again, he was very well-trained, monk, very knowledgeable in the sutras and read, studied Dogen, and also, you know, did zazen regularly. Oh, here's a good one. Rags upon rags, tatter is my life. I pluck my food on a country path. My hut is buried in a tangle of weeds. Looking at the moon, I hum all night. Deluded by blossoms, I forget to return. Since leaving the monastery, what a fool I have become. So, 1,000 peaks merge with frozen clouds. 10,000 paths have no human trace. Day by day, just facing the wall. At times I hear this. I hear that snowdrift over the window. I'll read that again. 1,000 peaks merge with frozen clouds. 10,000 paths have no human trace. Day by day, just facing the wall. At times I hear snow drift over the window. So, just to read a few more. Before listening to the way, do not fail to wash your ears. Otherwise, it will be impossible to listen clearly. What is washing your ears? Do not hold on to your view. If you cling to it even a little bit, you will lose your way. What is similar to you but wrong, you regard as right. What is different from you but right, you regard as wrong. You begin with ideas of right and wrong, but the way is not so. Seeking answers with closed ears is like trying to touch the ocean bottom with a pole. I'll read it again. Before listening to the way, do not fail to wash your ears. Otherwise, it will be impossible to listen clearly. What is washing your ears? Do not hold on to your view. If you cling to it even a little bit, you will lose your way. What is similar to you but wrong, you regard as right. What is different from you but right, you regard as wrong. You begin with ideas of right and wrong, but the way is not so. Seeking answers with closed ears is like trying to touch the ocean bottom with a pole. Just a couple more. On a quiet evening in my thatch-roofed hut, alone I play a lute with no string. Its melody enters wind and cloud, mingles deeply with a flowing stream, fills out the dark valley, blows through the vast forest, then disappears. Other than those who hear emptiness, who will capture this rare sound? On a quiet evening in my thatch-roofed hut, alone I play a lute with no string. Its melody enters wind and cloud, mingles deeply with a flowing stream, fills out the dark valley, blows through the vast forest, then disappears. Other than those who hear emptiness, who will capture this rare sound? How could we discuss this and that without knowing the whole world is reflected in a single pearl? How could we discuss this and that without knowing the whole world is reflected in a single pearl? So maybe I should mention, that in his last years, I think starting when he was, 68, 69, he had this love affair with a nun, Tatian, who was a blind nun, who befriended him, and they wrote poems to each other. Anyway, there's a whole record of their love poems that they wrote to each other. Kind of sweet. Let me see if I'll find one or two of those. She once went to see him, and he wasn't there. And she wrote, "You who play in the Buddha way, bouncing a ball endlessly, must be the one. Is it your dharma?" And then, she was a good poet, too. There's just a lot of these. I'll find one of his. "Too long to wait for the autumn bush clover to bloom. You have pushed through the dew-covered summer grass." Oh, here you are. Anyway, I don't know if this is exactly a death poem, but one of his last poems was... What legacy shall I leave behind? Flowers in spring, cuckoos in summer, maple leaves in autumn. So, anyway, that's a little bit about Ryokan and his grass hut. Questions, comments, responses. It sort of adds to the song of the grass hut, doesn't it? Yes.
I have a question. So, do you read them in the original language as well, and are they very different?
Oh, well, there's some various translations. These are translations from Kaz Ta-Nehisi, and there are numbers of translations. And I don't have with me any of the. There are some volumes that have the sound. Some of them are in Chinese and some of them are in Japanese.
Do they translate well, I guess I'm asking?
I think these are decent translations. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, the Japanese ones particularly have a sound that's nice, and I didn't bring any of the, I don't think I have any. I mean, I have numbers of other translations. I did some of these translations with Kaz, but the ones from his book, Sky Above Great Wind, he doesn't have the Japanese. But I could read more. But comments, Jamie?
I was struck today chanting the song of the grass,
how much we don't live in grass huts?
We don't live, yeah. You know, we have like our brick huts or something. But I guess I was struck by just how in contemporary moment it kind of plays into this desire of escapism, like let's escape to the mountains or let's escape to some field and live, you know, in like a simple way. And that feeds really into like this escapist desire to really like not deal with a lot of the problems of society, which is
right.
Like so often it's, you know, living in a city you can't really avoid. You have to live a certain, there's like a speed to the city, there's a stimulation, there's like so much of that. And so I guess my question to you is like, I read this as a, like in some ways a teaching text more than a kind of like let's all go find a grass hut.
Right.
And I guess my question for you is just what is the urban equivalent of this? What is the urban equivalent of living in a grass hut, and what does that mean?
What is the teaching that this? So I hear your question is what is the teaching that this might offer to us?
Or like if we were to translate it into a city imagery.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've heard that it's hard to be a saint in the city, but well, you know, maybe it's easier if you go live, you know, I mean, like Walden, except that he brought his laundry home to, you know, as we know, but still, just this image, I think it, so yes, of course, our practice is not to ignore the suffering of the world. And, you know, these were simpler times, or these were times when there was not so much of a way to respond to, because in Tokugawa Japan and in some ways in modern Japan, but, you know, particularly in that society, in that culture, things were very controlled. So, yet there is this image of the possibility of living this way. And I don't know, amongst the unhoused peoples in our big cities, there may be some who choose to live that way. In fact, I know there are some. And that's not to say that that's what our practice should be. But I think there's some value to just seeing that there have been these people in our tradition who have lived simply. And I think for us too, to be aware of living more simply, not as a way of running away from or escaping from the problems of our own life or the problems of the world or ignoring responding to all of that, but part of what our practice can give us is a sense of what the Song of the Grass Hut implies is just this kind of simplicity of response. Now, when the problems of the world are dire and complex and you know, as we know, with climate chaos and the chaos of our governmental and justice system and so forth right now, how do we respond? Well, it's not that we should ignore it or just give up or feel overwhelmed, but how do we find a place of simplicity from which to then respond? So that's just my response to your question. I don't have the answers, obviously.
I thought I'd chime in. Can I chime in?
Please.
Yeah, well, and engagement is one of the most extreme forms of escapism. Or can be understood as such. You point the finger at the moon and distinguish the finger from the moon is to recognize their sameness. So in a city as hectic and chaotic as maybe Chicago would be, engagement in that is a form of escape at the same time.
Engagement in what? I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
I think engagement in the thing that you have a sense of separation from escapes from the sense of you're being a chaotic or a hectic place. So it's a matter of perspective in terms of your relationship with the thing that you're sensing your separation with. It's necessary to even come to terms with the idea of escaping from it. Is that correct?
That's obscure.
So I mean, I'm not
sure I understand what you're saying. But I want to though.
Because this is what I heard also in that glorious readings. And so Jamie, you mentioned escapism as a kind of a false narrative, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have to address the terms false. Term itself, escape. We all know the great campaign Escape Wisconsin, for instance. And, and you know, how meaningful is that? You know, we felt a void in that, an emptiness right away, I think. I mean, I did, because I didn't see anything to escape you up there. But and then there was the idea of escaping to Wheaton, all these things came up. Escape the loop.
People talk about escaping to Canada.
Right? So the notion of escape itself rings a certain bell in our minds. It's not clear to me which bell it's ringing.
Yeah.
And so how false the narrative is, and of course it's a metaphor, right? And as a metaphor, it's a symbol. The word itself, of course, is a symbol. It can only be that. And so that we have to pick, what's an escape for us? What is that entitled? What is that? Is that entitlement? A privilege? Obligation, necessity, something that we wish for but cannot obtain. You know what I mean? It's a very playful, whimsical kind of investigation, maybe. And I think that this poetry points to that very clearly.
Points to escape as being not, the idea of escape not being an escape.
But as the fantasy of a fool.
But I would say, I think I get what you're saying, but I don't know that Ryokan is escaping. He's there in his life.
Yes.
He's going out every day, begging for whatever food he's going to eat. I didn't talk about his drunkenness. That's
I brought that to mind.
You know, there's amongst the foolish stories is him, you know, a guest coming and him going to get something for the guest, and then, one time getting a bottle, and then just, you know, and then the guest can't find him, and then there he is drinking, and he's, you know, he forgot to bring it back. Or another time, he never even got to the wine store. He just stopped and started looking at the moon, and you know, is transfixed. So he's totally engrossed in his life, and his life is very simple, but it's very full for him. So. You were talking, I think, Jamie, about not responding to the situation of, you know, the city or whatever it is, or the world or social. It's a real question.
Yeah, I was just thinking. I was in chanting this today. I was just thinking about, like, I understand it's a. But I was also struck by how in a contemporary moment the image and the narrative bears a empty value to escapism. Well,
that'll do too.
And I was just thinking about like that.
Yeah, but
how does food translate to this?
Yeah, but I think this is not that. This is, and I think in Song of the Grass Hut too, and in Ryokan, who was fully there in his foolish life. So it's, but you know, this, that, these are good questions to ask of this. Yes, Jen. Oh dear.
I was thinking about escapism, and I know a person who is literally escaping to Canada, and to get away from Trump, and to get away from being in the United States during this period, And that's one of the things. There's all kinds of issues that people just escape from by denying their existence, and that this is what's happened with climate change. You know, it doesn't exist. For the last 30 years, people have denied that it was real.
It's a Chinese hoax, right?
Whatever. It's an escape from having to deal with.
Yeah.
And so my question was, when he said he was emerging from Somalia, or did he say escaping from? No, he didn't say escaping.
No.
He said emerging from Somalia. Well, really, I couldn't figure out what that meant.
Well, getting up from you know, very intense settling into sitting facing the wall. No, samadhi is another way of talking about zazen. Samadhi means meditation. It technically means concentration, so or intense concentration. But we chant the song of the Jewel Mare. Samadhi so it's used in different ways. But basically, it generally refers to meditation or settled meditation. So he was emerging from his meditation.
Because I always feel kind of, you know, vaguely guilty because I'm so bad at meditating. And one of the things I do when I'm meditating is recite the precious Mary Samadhi.
Well, that's good.
I meditate to get through the time.
Well, we should talk about that. But that's, you know, to use verses like that as a dharani or during meditation is not necessarily a bad practice. You know, it's a way you can, it's something, it's a way of doing zazen. So we can talk about that individually in terms of refining how you do that. Yes, Alex.
Very attracted to this image of the old fool, perhaps because I am a young fool. And I wonder if you could say anything about the practice of foolishness. Is there a responsible way to be foolish? Is there a
No, that's a really wonderful question. I think that's a good question for you to hold, to sit with for some years.
For many years.
And
I went to Iowa and just knocked on strangers' doors. He's a great example.
So yeah, it's you know, this thing about escape. The point is not so. There's a negative escape would be to run away from yourself. So don't escape. Don't try and escape from yourself or escape from reality, whatever that is. But to be wholeheartedly, fully yourself might look really foolish. And that's how it was with Ryokan. So we're a little past time, but if there's one more urgent comment or question or response, anybody? Jan, you have something you wanted to say.
To live such a life, you do need a support group that is not being foolish in the same way you are, because if you have a begging bowl, somebody has to have resources to fill your begging bowl. And the people of the generation just after me really assumed that they went into the woods and wanted to start canoes, and they would weave and make beautiful weavings, but then they had to sell them to make a living. And somebody out there had to buy them so that they could have this lifestyle. And like you said, Walden, Thoreau, took his laundry home. This really simplified his life, you know.
Yeah, so there have been, you know, going back to the Transcendentalists and back to, you know, my old hippie days, there were all these experiments in communes and so forth, and some worked better than others, and these are worthy experiments. And Ryokan is part of that tradition, too. But, you know, he had a support system. He had these children who he played with. So, but that was part of the culture. So this is not part of our culture. But in Japan, people, and in Asia, lay people are, it's part of their culture. They get merit blessings for making donations to temples to practitioners. It's just part of their culture. They assume that. So the society supported him to some extent. It's not like panhandlers in the loop, you know, who are not given some status in the society.